And now a word from our friends at BetOnline. BetOnline, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website, betonline.ag, or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
What is going on, beautiful people? Alex Schoen coming at you, and on to episode of the Believe in the Garden State podcast. I am solo dolo today. Ryan is not in. We will look forward to seeing him next week. you think I would really do that to you? Come on. We do have a two-man team for today. Let me introduce our recurring guest host, who you all have known to love. He's a former captain at Rutgers University, future U.S. citizen. Ladies and gentlemen, from north of the border, Austin Devitkos.
Thanks for the intro, buddy. I don't know about U.S. citizen. We'll get working on that in a couple of years. I am Canadian for all the viewers. Happy to be back for my fourth appearance. I'm the honorary guest here on the pod, but like always, I'm fired up.
Yeah, dude, you're one of our lacrosse insiders, man.
Official title, LAX analyst.
LAX analyst.
What's up, Quint? Where you at?
yeah, man. But listen, great to see you. Let's get right into it, dude. What was your impressions of the games this weekend, particularly Rutgers UNC? Phenomenal weekend for the most part.
All right, let's start with just a generic theme across all the games. Aside from the Virginia game, which was an absolute blowout, every other game was one goal. Phenomenal lacrosse, especially, you know, COVID weekend, you're sitting at home, you don't have much to do, you're watching the games, and you get exposure to the NCAA Division I circuit. So definitely phenomenal. Now, particularly to Rutgers, this is the first full game I got to watch this year, because being Canadian, you don't get ESPN. So one of my buddies who lives in Toronto sent me a bootleg link. I got access to it, watched the entire game. Let me tell you, start to finish, oh, it was a barn burner. Great game to watch. Heartbreaking at the end. We can get into the nitty-gritty, but what were your initial impressions, man? I know you were at the game with all the boys.
Well, first of all, it was a phenomenal experience just being at the game. And I know we were kind of supposed to be in like our own little pods, but it was a free for all. The boys were all over it, bringing some good energy. The Rutgers fans were awesome, and we definitely outnumbered the Carolina fans in terms of energy and numbers. So it was a great experience. Number one, number two, it was a heartbreaker that we lost, but I think that I came out of that game thinking Rutgers was the better team. And sometimes the better team doesn't always win the game. The team that makes more plays is going to win the game. And the team that makes those plays in important situations is also going to win the game. And hats off to Carolina. They made the plays when they needed to, especially in the middle of the field with their 10-man ride. Now, what I didn't understand was, and we talked about this like last week on the show, I didn't understand why everyone thought Carolina was going to absolutely blow the doors off Rutgers. Like if you watch the film and you follow both these teams all year long, like you knew this was going to be a close game. So for people who like, oh, Rutgers gave Carolina like everything they could handle. Like, yeah, but there's also like the view where it's like Rutgers was better than Carolina. Like they, dude, in the 6-on-6, Rutgers was the better team. Carolina just made more plays in those uneven situations, which we thought Rutgers was going to make. But that 10-man ride, man, we said it was going to be key to the game. I thought Rutgers was going to not have as hard a time as they did. They were 10 of 10 in the first half clearing the ball. And the stats are going to be a little misleading when it comes to clearing in the second half. It says we only failed three, although they were three very important clears. I think we failed a little bit more than three clears because we turned the ball over across the midfield line. And when you get the ball across the midfield line, it counts as a clear.
Yes. Great point on that. And I know you had mentioned that before of like, oh, everybody thinks UNC's, you know, it's going to be a shoe-in game. UNC's going to dummy them. Absolutely not. And for anybody who's listening right now, and you've been proactively listening to this podcast, if you go back to the last one with Chad Tolliver, and we talk about this game, a lot of things came to fruition, particularly on the UNC side, who was playing and who wasn't. Connor McCarthy comes in, didn't play first round game against Monmouth. He drops two against us, gets the OT winner. He used to play at Princeton. And then Tanner Cook didn't play except for two shifts, and he played on man up and got absolutely stuffed on the crease by Kirst. And then on our side of things, like, just we matched up really well with them defensively. You know, we were winning our matchups consistently, but where the game ended up, you know, turning over, like you said, was in the riding and clearing and in those big key moments. So, I mean, I coach a youth lacrosse team up here, and I break down film every week. As soon as that game was done, I broke down the film immediately. And the first four clips that I chose were the fail clears. And like you said, whether it's crossing half or not. And one of my keynotes that I wrote was, when you face the best, and my metric of best for this would be UNC was ranked number one, right? Your margin of error is so small that on every mistake you make, the other team will capitalize on. And that's what the best teams do. Do I think we were better than them? Yes. But when it came down to those dire moments, like, they're so minuscule. But on the bright side, there's so many positives to take away from it. Good learning experience for everyone. I'm extremely proud of the program, but absolute heartbreaker.
Yeah, dude, I was so gutted. We were all so gutted, man. We literally went back to Peters's house, Chris Peters, Rutgers lacrosse, class of 2017. Went back to his house and we just ate ice cream and pizza, really depressing. Like, depressingly. Like, we were just like, wow. Like, it almost felt like we lost the game. Like, because you just like, you're just, you feel so a part of it. You know what I mean? And just like, it would have been one thing. And just to add to that, it's like when you add the COVID protocols, like Big Ten testing every single day, and these guys are getting something shoved up their nose 6 days a week, like just the sacrifice. I mean, in a normal season, you sacrifice a lot, but this season they just sacrificed so much more because think about it. Like, they got tested every single day. And they couldn't go out as much because if they went out, like, someone could have got COVID. And, you know, it's really hard to just be pent up in your apartment or in your house or whatever and not get that urge. So kudos to these guys for making that sacrifice. Cause I don't know, man, I don't know if we could have done the same thing. Like,
yeah, they sacrificed a lot. Everything came to fruition. If you look at the grand scheme of the entire year, like, you couldn't be prouder as an alum. They got it done. They made the NCAA tournament. They beat Lehigh in the first round. Haven't done that since what? 1990, right?
Yep. 1990.
And then they come out and they're toe to toe in a boxing match against UNC. So, I mean, outstanding job by the team in the season. I want to give us a couple special shout outs here. Obviously, my Canadian bias plays a huge role, but AC, man, if you're hearing this, dude, I love you. Like, I was texting the 2018 alums in the chat saying, can you please give him a hug for me? I would have been at that game, but we can't cross the border. And I know your family hasn't been at any game, dude. So I know Deb and everybody else really loves you, man. And then just trickling down the line, guys like Kieran, like, phenomenal job. I remember when you were a freshman. The Curse brothers, like, you two are something extremely special. And I can go through one by one. You know, just like, phenomenal job this year, and big ups to the coaching staff, man. Like, we always praise Jimmy and Brecht. Saruman has been on the staff for, I think, 3 years now. And then Dolan, the new volunteer, then trickle down the line, like Wally and Chris, and then Yuli, our boy Yuli.
Frank.
So, thank you. You guys made this year so exciting. Fuck.
Oh, shout out Teresa.
Just get the whole roster.
I mean, listen, man, it takes a village to have a successful program or organization, you know, not just in college sports, but in, you know, anywhere.
Oh yeah. I mean, definitely, like, all everything that goes on in the back end, and more on the humorous side of the game. It's just like, I'm watching on TV, whatever, my stream, and I'm seeing you, I'm seeing Traz, Bronzo, Binks, all the guys in the stands absolutely rowdy. I'm just like, yo, god damn. I would have loved to be there, but I knew you guys were rocking the house, man.
The boys were thriving. Yo, we were so rowdy. It was awesome. Yo, I didn't even realize like the camera angles for ESPN. Like, we didn't even know we were being recorded, and it looks like we're staring at the camera, like on the pictures.
Buddy, that camera was staring directly at you a couple of times, and you guys were like pointing at it, flexing muscles. But what got me really fired up, and you tell me if I'm wrong on this, when AC dropped a couple goals, was he pointing at you guys?
He was staring at us. I mean, you'd have to ask him. It seemed like he was looking at us. Yeah. And we went insane. And he did like his little celly, and it was pretty awesome, especially when he did the backhander. Oh my God. Yo, we erupted. We absolutely erupted.
Yeah, man. So, yeah, his cellies were on point that day, but I knew he was going to have a day, because when Kieran drew it, it was in the first quarter, Kieran drew two, he's pushing away, gets his hands free, throws a skip to AC. AC is now guarded by Will Bowen, one of the best defensemen in the country. Little like rocker step turns. Like, I don't know if he went bar D, but he went top right and absolutely stung it. I was like, this guy's on today. He wants it. And it got everybody fired up. So, damn.
Yeah, he was killing it. And one guy who I think kept us in the game, we said faceoffs was going to be a key. DeGenio. How about John DeGenio showing a little bit of what he can be potentially going forward for RU? Going, I believe he was 15 of 27.
Yeah, phenomenal, man. He's an absolute workhorse. You know, even if he loses the initial clamp, and there's a 50-50 GB, he is hustling for that all day long. Special teams played a huge role. I mean, specialty positions played a huge role with him, as well as like, what's the goalie's first name?
Blank
Hurst. Colin. Phenomenal, man. You made us so proud this year, buddy. Holy patience in that. Always shot ready. Dialed in.
Dude, he also had some sick outlet passes. He had this one outlet pass, the bullet, that like, it looked like, yeah, it looked like a quarterback throwing a slant route, like over the top.
The only thing is, this guy throws like lobs, because I think his bag is extremely big that he uses for his pocket, but they're pretty money for the most part.
Yo, you got to ask him when he comes on the show, dude. Get ready for that episode. That's going to be a good time.
Yeah, I want to ask him about his two doorstep saves on Tanner Cook, because my buddy texted me saying, oh, Tanner Cook's not playing. They should put him on the crease for man up. Verbatim said that, and then all of a sudden two doorstep and just two phenomenal saves. So damn.
Yeah, so I mean, what other games impressed you besides Georgetown and Virginia?
So I watched the full Virginia Georgetown game. I mean, Virginia is phenomenal in my opinion. Georgetown had a really good year as well, but I saw some clips on the Duke Loyola gave them everything that they had. I thought they were going to come away, but I was so impressed with the Notre Dame Maryland game. I didn't catch the game till about the end of the third and the fourth quarter. Once again, texting my friend, I think Maryland's down by three. And I was like, watch how this pans out. Maryland is clutch. I do support Big Ten lacrosse. I was tired of everybody hyping up the ACC and other conferences and just kicking us to the curb. And I'm so happy that Maryland came away with it.
We still hate
any
them,
Maryland though. Haters. Yeah,
we still hate them though. Don't think that we like you, Maryland. We don't like you. We don't like you.
I think
we respect you though. We respect you.
We do respect you. We haven't beaten them yet. And I think what was so impressive about that game is that they were kind of like sharks in water and smelt the blood. Notre Dame got tired, and Maryland just got up and out and made plays happen. And it was just impressive to watch that fourth quarter. So I really hope they come away and do some damage, just because they're a Big Ten program. What about you, man?
You're watching that game, and let's give Bobby Russo a lot of credit for shutting down Chris Gray. But after watching those two games, yep. Is there any doubt that Jared Bernhardt is the best player in Division I lacrosse?
Absolutely.
No way.
No shot. He is the best player right now. running for the Twarton, in my opinion, extremely athletic on another level this year. I remember when he was younger and we were still around and we're like, hey, he's really good. He's just on another level this year. Like, he just put up 5 goals against Notre Dame. He's creating separation off of his second step, turning the corner and goal. So who do they play this upcoming weekend? Is it Duke?
Yeah, Duke.
I got my money on Maryland. I think Duke's off-ball defense is going to suffer because they're going to be so so contained. What do we do with Bernhard? And I know Duke's off-ball defense hasn't been that great lately, so it's going to be interesting to see how it pans out.
Now, I've watched quite a bit of Maryland this year. I haven't watched every single game, like every single like detail, but I don't think I've seen anyone shut him off yet. Why do you think no one has done that? And maybe they have, but I haven't seen it.
For foot speed, I don't think anybody can match with him.
So it doesn't even matter.
It doesn't even matter. Like, if you watch the Notre Dame clip, like if there's a short stick shutoff for like a quick second, he'd just get in and out, create separation and go in, and there'd be an early slide. But you have to also think about the 5 players that play around him. Maryland is extremely sound. They have Wisnowskis around him. They have DeMeo coming out of the midfield. They have Bubba Fairman and Kyle Long, Dylan Maltz. Their starting 6 is phenomenal, and they complement each other really well.
Well, Danny Maltz.
Danny Maltz.
Dylan's his brother who we played against, so I actually was with at Syracuse. We were freshmen.
Also very good off-ball player, high IQ.
Oh, super. Oh my God. People would like – it's funny. It's so funny. Like, people would people used to disrespect him so much by putting a short stick on him, and he would always like go off. Yeah. He would always go off. And I just like, those guys. I was texting him the other day. Actually, I was like, dude, you taught your brother well. He's like, thanks, brother. And I'm like, I still hate Maryland.
I mean, love him or hate him, you got to respect them. That's my opinion. And the one thing that I do applaud them, based on my experience playing, is they didn't really chirp much. I don't know if they, when you're around, if they're chirping, hooting and hollering, they kind of did their thing.
You got to ask AC. I remember.
Never mind. I take that back.
You remember that time? You remember that time someone was chirping him and he went off?
Oh yeah. It was like at the end of the first half, we're running back to the locker room and AC's chirping. This is when he was injured that year, and I was right beside him. I was like, man, if you're going, I'm going, but nothing came of it.
But I got to ask him that story. We got to have him on the show.
Oh yeah.
I was talking to him about it at some, during the season, I was talking to him about it, but then like, as they started like getting on a little bit of a roll, I kind of didn't want to interrupt that.
Yeah. Let his voodoo keep rolling. But who do you think's winning it this year, bud? Let's start with this. I mean, this is the final weekend. So what do you think?
I think it's going to be Maryland and Virginia. And yep. I'm saying that because when you look at these two teams, it's like they match up extremely well versus their opponent. You look at Virginia, they beat UNC one of the two times in the second game, and their coaching staffs, both these Maryland and Virginia, are like the ultimate adjusters, right? And you could argue Duke as well. But in terms of in-game, like Maryland and Virginia, and from game to game. And yeah, people say Duke, like traditionally they finish the season strong, but I feel like that's more of a developmental aspect in terms of like getting their players better and more comfortable in their schemes. I look at Maryland as just like we've compared them to New England in terms of just taking away what you do best. And I look at Maryland and Virginia in the same light, having a chance to dissect the Virginia program a little bit. And you look at Virginia, they had 3 weeks off. Lars Tiffany went on record saying that he talked to the football coach about how he handles bowl prep. And that's a long time. I've been through bowl practices. Like those, that's tough. Like that is it's like a mini training camp. And if you handle it properly, you can really come out on the other side a lot better. Virginia looks like a completely different team since their loss to Syracuse. So I look at those two teams and I think I got to give it to Maryland if they're playing Virginia. I got to give it to them because I feel like last time they played, and obviously last year has nothing, 2 years ago has nothing to do with this year, but last time they played Virginia kind of got a little lucky. So I think Maryland's going to, if they're playing Virginia, I think Maryland's going to remember that and leave no doubt. And so, dude, I hate to say it, but Maryland's going to go undefeated.
Was it that controversial crossbar goal from 2 years ago when they was at Hofstra?
Yeah, it was like it hit the post and it was called the goal.
But yeah, we'll see. I think the exact same thing as you. I don't know who's going to win the Maryland Virginia game, and the only reason why I say that is because if I look at Virginia's polls right now, Kevin Warren, the Georgetown coach, called like a bunch of velociraptors as in Jurassic Park. Cole, one of the polls for Virginia is 6'7". He's from Menlo Park area. We'll have to fact check that.
Menlo Park, New Jersey?
No, Menlo. No, California.
I was about to say.
Yeah, and then who's it? Kyle Cologne?
Kologi, he's from Chatham, Chatham, New Jersey. You're thinking, and Jared Connors?
He's the LSM, and there's one more poll who's Cade Sostad. So a lot of these guys, I think all of them are over like 6'1", 6'2". So they're going to match up really well with the Maryland offense, but that'll be a super exciting game if it gets to that, and I really hope it does.
But if anybody can match up with Bernhardt, would it be this weekend with JT Giles Harris?
I don't think so,
because I don't think anybody can match up with him. But would it be this weekend, like the best chance for anybody to go one-on-one with him, mano a mano, you and me, let's go?
I think it is the best chance, but with Bobby Benson running the offense this year and them using razor picks and up picks, and like, can JT Giles Harris play really well up top too if Bernhardt brings the ball up top? So they're going to be attacking them at every single angle. My only concern with that Duke game would be, is the Duke offense humming? Is the Maryland's defense that good?
Well, I think they are that good. And as you know, I mean, they have our former defensive coordinator running the show for them, who's really, really smart. So he'll figure it out.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, but you got Michael Sowers, you got Brennan O'Neill, Nekhai Montgomery.
But dude, you look at Duke and they're just like when you look, like, I think, you know, is this a hot take? I think Sowers was better at Princeton than he was that last year. Granted, against worse competition besides Virginia, when they played Virginia, I think Sowers was better last year than he is this year. And I don't know if that's because he just had less pieces around him, so that everyone like had to revolve around him, and he doesn't like the. The offense certainly revolves around Sowers, but like there's more mouths to feed. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely multivariable, but like you said, like all the pieces around him, how much is he actually holding the ball? Something that I did notice early on in the season with Duke is they had Sowers. Sorry, let's backtrack. Last year at Princeton, Jim Mitchell, who was our offensive coordinator, went down to Princeton. And they would use a lot of pick play, but then they started using Sowers and dodging him from up top. Whereas when he went to Duke, it was a lot of from behind. And I would say about a couple games in, they're like, okay, let's get him the ball. Let's get him dodging from up top as well. I forgot what game, like they went into OT, hit a bunch of up picks, had two goals down the alley left-handed. So it's just a matter of how they're utilizing him. And I think they're growing as a staff on that. So was he better at Princeton? Subjective. Because it's like the talent level. He's also playing the ACC this year. And with the transfer portal, the ACC is pretty dominant. Hot take? I don't know, man.
Okay, ACC dominant, but they're better than everybody, but not by a lot in comparison to the Big Ten. And I think we saw that this weekend when Rutgers probably was the better team than North Carolina, although they didn't win.
I mean, shoulda, woulda, coulda, right? We could say like they were – the best team on the field that day is dictated by the score, which is Carolina, right? But
I mean, I agree, but I think you put the ACC in an all-conference schedule, like you're not going to be able to tell either.
Oh, 100%. I thought the Big Ten, like how the lacrosse community was consistently ragging on them, and then they were hyping up like the Patriot League. Like, look, the Patriot League's outstanding academics and lacrosse as well. However, do not neglect the Big Ten. If you had teams like Hopkins playing out of conference, Penn State, I think a lot of things would have changed. But once again, circumstances are circumstances with COVID. Should have, would have, could have.
Dude, next year the Big Ten is going to go off on everybody, and it's going to be so funny.
I certainly hope so. I certainly hope so. Because it was when we were playing, it was like ACC was the best, then Big Ten, then ACC was flip-flopping, and then the Ivy League got substantially better. The whole grand scheme of college across has gotten better, but historically it's been ACC, and now with the Big Ten conference starting in 2015, it's shaking things up a little bit.
So listen, we've talked about Rutgers. We talked about college going forward. Let's talk about the pro game, man. Have you watched the pro game at all?
To be completely honest, not entirely too much. I did watch a little bit this past summer when they were in the bubble in Utah, because it actually aired on TV in Canada. So that was the first summer I was like, okay, this is cool. Got exposed to it. But I know you're extremely into it, but I know a lot of the players as well.
Yeah, dude. So there's like 20 plus New Jersey guys playing in the league. You know, we got the Rutgers guys. We got guys like Chris Azalanian from Westfield, Brad Smith, I believe is from Mountain Lakes. Nick Grill and BJ Grill are from Bridgewater. We got Connor Kirsch, Rutgers and Bernardsville. Del Barton, you got Matt McMahon from Glen Ridge. You got, you know, the list goes on. Obviously, Jules, Scarpello. So let's talk about some of those Jersey guys, man. Let's start with the Rutgers guys. So I think the number one newcomer has got to be Michael Rexrow. Did you watch Rex in the bubble last year?
Yeah. Dominant, man. He's been on another level. He's been persistent, wants to take the next step and play in the PLL. He was the captain of the Outlaws and just doing his thing, dominating his matchup. So with playing at the next level, I'm curious to see if he cracks a lineup. Is he going to play up top? Is he going to play below? Like what his role would be? But there's no doubt that he's going to be ready to roll for camp.
Oh, dude, Michael Rexrow. If Michael Rexrow does not make a lineup, there is something wrong, because I think he's going to be one of the top 3 to 5, if not the best defender in the league. I mean, dude, have you seen that guy? He's gained like 20 pounds of pure muscle since we graduated college, and he was a moose back in college. Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year, 2-time All Big Ten guy, 2-time All American. Like Michael Rexrow is going to be a household name this year. He's going to be a lockdown cover guy, and I think what's going to be really special about him is he's got his defensive coordinator from Denver, which I know playing for the Outlaws really meant a lot to him. I remember talking to him, before the MLL went out about the transition. And he was like, yeah, I'm thinking about PLL, but like the Outlaws is like, I love the Outlaws. Like, I don't know what to do. I love the guys. And I think that's going to help him. And then playing with Kyle Pless and a couple other Outlaws guys, I believe are on the team, is going to help. And I think that continuity is going to help Rex Road be a great off-ball player in addition to his awesome skills as a lockdown cover guy. Obviously, he's a better lockdown cover guy than he is off-ball player, but he's still good off-ball.
Yeah, that's, I think, one of his hidden gems, man. And I hope a lot of coaches at the pro level understand, like, he's very good off-ball. He understands the flow of things. Historically, when you're covering the number one cover guy, like, he has the ball a lot, so you're going to get pretty tired. And to be communicating off ball entirely, just as a testament to show how good of shape he's in. So I'm excited about him.
Dude, did you see Rex guard Lyle Thompson?
Yeah, there's that one clip that blew up. I think he hit him on the trail track or the over the head. So,
dude, Rex is a baller. He's going to be awesome this year. Let's talk about Christian Mazzone, not born in New Jersey, but his connection to New Jersey, Rutgers University. What do you think of him? What do you think watching him last year?
Oh, aside from the 2-bar syndrome, I think he had a really good year. I'm not trying to play the Rutgers bias card here, and I know that we've been talking about them, but it's just because we are Rutgers guys, and it's great to see a lot of the continuity at the next level, and it's a testament to how we've been doing. But I think he was running in the second midfield line, sprinkled in a bit of the first midfield line. I could be wrong on that aspect, but just did his role. He was nitty gritty, caught a lot of attention in the PLL and lacrosse community just because of how hard he works, picks up the garbage goals, and he's just a big team guy in general. So I'm always excited to see his growth, and where he's come from in 2018 and onward. Just like Rex, very persistent guy.
Now let's talk about a guy who's not a Rutgers guy, but is a Jersey guy because of where he went to college. He's from Texas, but he went to Monmouth University. Bryce Wasserman, who Chad Tolliver said a lot of great things about last episode, who was on his podcast, Vibe Checkers. Go check out that show. Really awesome show. What do you think of Bryce coming in?
It was prior to the conversation with Chad. So if you're a viewer, please go reference the podcast because he does talk about Bryce Wasserman. What did I know about him? That he took a private jet to a game once.
I thought it was a helicopter.
A helicopter. But outside of that, the kid's got swagger, man. He's sneaky, really elevated his game, can attack you from behind, can't come out of the box as well. That's very key at the next level. It's like, okay, if you're a traditional attackman, now you're running out of the box and you're drawing a short stick. Like, you better be going to work and creating separation and drawing slides. So I think that's exactly what he can do. Just that swagger mentality he has, he should make an impact.
All right. Now let's go to somebody who is not a Rutgers guy or a Jersey college guy, but is a Jersey guy. Let's see how good your lacrosse knowledge is. I want to stump you here.
Oh God.
I want to stump you on somebody who you haven't seen a lot, who you haven't seen play a lot. Honestly, I've seen this guy play, but like not a whole lot. I know him. So I might be setting us both up for failure here. I didn't watch him too much with the Outlaws, but he was pretty damn good. Chris Aslanian from Westfield, New Jersey.
Chris Aslanian, Westfield, New Jersey. From my knowledge, so I don't have
Hobart College.
Hobart. I think he's a big lefty attackman, and now he's a was
righty. Big righty.
Big righty. Wore number 9 for the Outlaws, right?
No, that was Adler. He wore 57, I believe.
57.
He was the rookie of the year a couple of years ago.
Okay. From my knowledge is that this kid was coaching at Princeton as well. Not entirely too sure on his game. So in a roundabout way, you think you stumped me here, buddy.
All right. Well, I stumped myself too because I've watched him play. Obviously, I played with him a little bit in high school, but I haven't really watched too much him play. So
he's got a brother that I think went to he played college ball too, and I think his dad's a Rutgers alum.
I'm not sure. I'll have to double check on that. He's from Westfield. I know him. He's a really nice dude, and I play with him a little bit. He's a pretty good shooter. He gets separation. I wouldn't say he's like overly athletic, but he gets the job done. All right. Let's go through the list here. All right. You'll know this guy, Austin Sims.
Austin Sims.
Oh my God. Bring back some memories from Princeton University. He's not a Jersey guy, but Princeton, New Jersey. What do you think of his game?
Just based on my memory of him, freak athlete, could create separation. The only knock that I would say on him was his shooting percentage. He could shoot on the run, he could do step downs, but is he consistently hitting spots on the net? And I think from a matchup perspective, like at this level, he should be able to beat shorties. Granted, the short sticks in this league are phenomenal, so I think he could make an impact. What are your thoughts on him?
I know he's been in and out of the lineup. So I think when you know, it's going to be this camp period is probably going to be big for him to kind of, you know, just because you're going to this camp doesn't mean you're going to be on that final roster.
Yeah.
So I think he's just got to, you know, earn a spot and, you know, get hot and keep that confidence going. I mean, it's kind of tough when you're running on the same team as, you know, Tom Schreiber and, you know, you know, Mazzone's, you know, getting better and all those guys. So he's in a tough spot, but I think he'll be pretty good. All right, let's go through a couple more here. All right, let's talk about let's go to Jules Henenberg. Hasn't played since 2019. Was out of the bubble. What do you think of our boy Jules? How's he gonna do? Have you been paying attention to the Redwoods? They brought in Rob Pinnell. They have Ryder Garnsey, Kavanaugh, and who's their other attackman? Their other attackman is, hold on, give me a second. Matt Kavanaugh, Jules, Ryder Garnsey, Ryan Lee from the Outlaws and RIT.
Yeah, former teammate.
Yeah, they also have Charlie Bertrand. So where does Jules fit in this roster?
But before we go any further, who's on the midfield? Is it I think we got Perkovic and Miles Jones, right?
Joe Walters, Jamie Tromboli, excuse me, not Tromboli. Sound like Stromboli. Sergio Perkovic, Miles Jones, Kyle Harrison, yeah.
Okay, so off the bat, I'm curious to see what the coaches are going to do in training camp to see if they're going to run him from behind, obviously with Rob Pinnell, because Rob Pinnell plays behind, has really good vision. Regardless of where they play Jules, he's going to be in a nightmare. Like, imagine running out of the box, Sergio Perkovic, Jules Henningberg, and Miles Jones. The question is who draws the pull. If Jules gets a short stick, see you later, and they take him behind, he's going to create separation. He's got him bigger. I'm all in on him, man. And if he draws the pull at the midfield, I mean, the other teams are going to be sliding a lot to Miles Jones and Sergio Perkovic. So it's going to be extremely interesting.
Yeah, I think you look at Jules in 2019, towards the end of the year, after he got a concussion, he was running a lot of the midfield. He was running a lot out of the midfield. So I think you might see some similar stuff. Is he a great attackman? Absolutely. But you got a lot of mouths to feed. So it's just going to be where does everyone fit best? So I wouldn't, do I think he's going to play attack? I don't think so. But would it surprise me if he played attack and did really well? Absolutely not.
The bottom line, if you're a coach, Jules Henningberg needs to be on the field.
Oh, I 100% agree.
So playing out the box, playing below, you're going to get the best from him.
Now let's talk about the face-off game for this team. Going a little off topic, they have four face-off guys.
Okay.
I mean, you only keep, I don't know what the roster limit is, but you only keep, most teams only dress one or two guys. So I would think that would also open up an offensive spot for their final roster, right?
Who are we talking here?
They got T.D. Erlin.
Okay.
Charlie Leonard, Peyton Smith, and Greg Piskulzian.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if you weren't in the lacrosse community, if you're not very familiar with the lacrosse community and just look plainly on the eye test, you're going to go with T.D. Erlin, fresh out of college as well. So he's been playing. A lot of these other guys haven't played for a while. It's just going to be who's battle tested, who's it going to come down to, who performs in camp as well, and injuries. I mean, you have four face-off guys. Are you really going to need them all? No. So
it's going to be T.D. Erlin. Yeah. It's going to be T.D. Erlin, bro.
Yeah.
That kid's legit, bro. I just wonder, like, what they're going to do, just bringing four guys to camp, I guess. They're just, I don't know. They're saying, hey guys, let's battle it out. But I don't see it not being T.D. Erlin. It's got to be him. But let's, to finish this up, let's talk about one guy, newcomer for the Dawgs.
The Dawgs.
Christian Scarpello getting a shot in the league. They list him as a regular midfielder, not a short stick defensive midfielder. I don't see him playing offense, but he's going to be a two-way guy. What do you think of his game? How does it translate to the league?
I mean, his style translates exactly to what you want to see in the PLL. I mean, he's one of the most talented lacrosse players I've ever played with, and he's just a gritty dude. So I remember seeing on Twitter that he got picked up, and I was fired up, and I know he hasn't played it in a while, but it kind of meshes well with the water dog mentality, newer team, kind of fuck you mentality. He's going to mesh well. When you saw him last weekend, did he look like he put on some weight, like he was ready to rock?
He looked like, yeah, he looked good. I wouldn't say he put on weight. I'd say he looks the same, but just better, like leaner.
Yeah, he's a freak.
Working hard.
He's sneakily athletic, and he has extremely high IQ. So
Natural athlete. I wouldn't say he's sneaky athletic. He's a natural athlete.
Sneaky in the sense that, like, if he has the ball on the offensive end and he's covered by an offensive midfielder and he's trying to run any sort of NASCAR transition play, his IQ can get him away with a lot of stuff, and he can create separation. So I think he's got all the tools in the toolbox, man.
He's slippery too.
Slippery is better than sneaky, in my opinion.
Hey, slippery, man. He'll just be like, I'm Binky Doe.
Buddy, all the refs in the PLL, you better keep an eye on him behind the scenes, man.
Oh, yeah. Yo, I don't know how he's gonna do in the walk up where they like walk next to each other. He's gonna be like, yo, get away from me, bro. Yo, I don't want to freaking see you before the game. It's you versus me, us versus the world.
Yeah, man. So, I mean, I'm excited for him to be back in the mix. It's been, he hasn't played since our college days. I mean, he played out in England, but it's been a while.
So, Joe Nardella is going to win MVP this year?
I certainly hope so.
Should have won it last year.
This year, in my opinion, is going to be very, very interesting for the PLL. And the reason why I say that is because one, COVID, point B of point one would be in Canada, in Ontario, we've been in lockdown since last March. So are these guys training? Have they had access to facilities? Like everything's been closed. So how are they going to show up to camp? Are a lot of the teams with the Canadians going to be slow starters and pick up speed a week or two in? Are they going to be injury prone? So I think it's going to heavily impact the league this upcoming summer.
Well, I hope everyone stays healthy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, listen, Oz, it's been fun breaking down the games from the weekend and breaking down some of our buddies and some other Jersey guys. So listen, man, can't thank you enough for coming on, and I'll talk to you soon.
You too, man. Love you. And thanks as always, buddy.
Hey, you made it to the end, or I'm just talking to myself and Ryan.
You stay classy, Piscataway.